You be live at the Natural Science Complex of the State University of New York at Buffalo. I'm Dr. Michael Bozarth. The following presentation is a lecture delivered to my Psychology 451 course on drug addiction. The book is titled Fundamentals of Drug Addiction, A Psychobiological Approach. The book is currently in preparation with a spring 2013 anticipated publication date. Students enrolled in the course have access to printed text, study guides, and slides to support the learning objectives. These materials are not yet available to the general public. Sit back, enjoy, and learn. This presentation is part 7 of our primer on psychopharmacology and explores the importance of conditioning effects in psychopharmacology. It opens with a brief overview of the various factors that can modify a drug's pharmacological effects. These factors are grouped into subject variables, which are intrinsic to the organism, and environmental variables, which are extrinsic to the organism. The presentation is joined in progress describing a figure which illustrates how a drug's pharmacological effects are modified by these variables to produce its composite psychopharmacological effect. That last figure is just to remind you that the drug comes in, acts as a pharmacological agent. It's modified by subject variables, your history of learning, your history of conditioning, your genetics, stress going on in your life will cause changes in brain chemistry that make the drug effect different in some cases. And then those in turn further interact with environmental variables, what's going on around you. Lots of loud music, lots of crazy people, lots of peer pressure, whatever. Lots of people look like they're getting high. People are taking a pill and they're going, wow, this is really cool. That makes the tendency of you take that pill and go, I'm not feeling anything. Are you sure? Aren't you feeling it yet? Are you feeling it yet? Oh yeah, I'm starting to get it. Wow, this is really cool. See, people used to be able to cheat novice drug users by taking a drug that has a little stimulatory property and sneaking it off as a drug they expect to have a lot of stimulatory property. In other words, selling a little bit of strychnine as amphetamine. Can't get too much, they're going to convulsions and die. They won't buy anymore. But a little bit might be a general CNS stimulant. Strychnine kills by overstimulating. And then somebody gets a little stimulant and now interacts with the expectation. Next thing you know, they're going like this. You're laughing your pants off saying, God, I gave them damn rat poison. Look at them. They think they're high on it. Or getting high on banana peel. Somebody probably did. But it's not the banana peel. It's the expectancy. It's the catnip. Oh, my cat. Look at my cat. It's really getting stoned, man. Are you feeling anything yet? Not much. Oh, wow. Yeah. So you get a little hypoxia, asphyxiation from taking in too much carbon monoxide. And that'll make you a little dizzy. It's a narcosis effect, actually. Now that little dizzy might be interpreted as, I'm getting high like the cat. Wow. Let's go rub up against the tree. Next thing you know, you're rubbing up against your mom's leg, you know, meowing. This is basically what you might call a placebo effect. Those rats that receive cocaine on three different occasions, they have that nice sensitized response. What happens with that group of rats? Instead of giving them cocaine, you give them a saline or placebo injection on the test day, and you test them in the apparatus where they're used to getting cocaine. Well, there's what happens. The group that's been receiving cocaine, but they're given a placebo injection, show much higher locomotor responses than the group that's been receiving saline and never experienced cocaine in that chamber. That's a conditioned response. They're responding as if they got cocaine, but they got placebo. That's my little rats. I didn't even have to tell them how to act. No social cues. See, humans have social cues. You got cognitive expectancies, things that you read, people that you observe around you. So humans are even more complex in the way the drug might be modified. Now, how strong is that response? Well, I put the 95% confidence interval for how animals respond initially under that same dose of cocaine that they're conditioned on. These rats received 10 milligrams of cocaine for three different trials, each separated by 3 days. The first trial, the acute effect of the cocaine, produced responding in this interval right here. That's the 95% confidence interval, or where you expect 95% of the values of rats responding under that initial dose of cocaine. In other words, the conditioned effect after only three conditioning trials is as strong as the effect cocaine initially produced as a drug. That's really strong, the way I translate it. That's only three conditioning trials. What do you do if you do 30? 15? You guys do some research. There's lots of stuff to be done. All these details aren't worked out. There's buco work to do. Now, let's put this back together in one last kind of summary. There's a lot of ways that conditioning can affect drug effects. Conditioning can cause the drug response to occur when the drug is absent. That's what I just showed you. That's conditioned responding, like a placebo effect. Conditioning can increase the magnitude of the attained drug effect. Remember that a lot of the sensitization is context dependent. So by definition, that's a conditioning effect. They're being conditioned to respond stronger. How that actually happens, nobody knows. But part of that is a pharmacological effect being added to or summated with a conditioned response. That's one hypothesis. In other words, you would respond a little bit if you just got placebo, and take that and add that to what the drug's doing, and the sum of those two locomotor activity changes would be greater than either one by itself. In other words, that's where the sensitized response may be coming from, part of it at least. Don't worry so much about where it comes from. The point is that the magnitude of the attained effect is stronger. Sensitization being the general process, the mechanism is things that people are still trying to work out what exactly causes that. So we would take it apart down to eventually when you get down to the molecule. By the way, we know something about the molecules. Nitric oxide, not to be confused with nitrous oxide, which is laughing gas. Nitric oxide is a retrograde neural messenger that's actually a gas in the brain. And it works from the postsynaptic membrane back to presynaptic. So it's one way to modify synaptic activity. Glutamate does the same thing, by the way. But we replicated the glutamate work and then discovered nitric oxide has a link in there, too. It was Science Magazine's Molecule of the Year back in the late 90s. So we investigate a lot of stuff. One of the things we showed is nitric oxide is important for sensitization. If you take it out, you take out much of the sensitization. If you take out glutamate with blocking the NMDA receptor, you also block much of the sensitization. So we know something about the molecular events. Conditioning tends to cause the drug effect to occur sooner after administration than predicted by its pharmacokinetics. It's typical to have people inject a drug and start feeling high before they're done pushing the plunger all the way through. Now, you know that drug takes at least 30 seconds or so to hit the brain. See, it takes a little time, but they may hit the plunger. They may hit the vein and start feeling high. Cocaine intranasally is easier to see. They snort it, and they're starting to go like this, like, you know, as soon as they snorted it. Well, it takes 2 or 3 minutes. What are they doing? It's a conditioned response. The response tends to occur sooner. Think of what happens when you ring the bell. The anticipatory response to the conditioned stimulus tends to occur sooner and sooner in time. So you can relate that back to Pavlovian conditioning. We have a mechanism in psychology. Are you starting to see yet why psychology is important in psychopharmacology? Get the hint here, because people in the med school don't understand this at all. They won't be hiring you guys for a long time to come. That's called translational research and addiction technology transfer. They haven't gotten the message yet. But all these psychological things like learning, conditioning, this figures a lot into drug responses. And the most dramatic is you're dead, you're alive. That's pretty dramatic drug response. That the context-dependent tolerance to the respiratory depressant effect of heroin. The other effect that is also related to conditioning is sometimes it attenuates or blocks. Most of these responses have to do with what we would call response mimicking effect. In other words, the conditioned response mimics the unconditioned response. You ring the bell, put in the food powder, the dog salivates. You ring the bell, put in the food powder, the dog salivates. You ring the bell, the dog gets a dry mouth. It salivates. That's called a mimicking response. It imitates the response. There are some condition effects that are opposing. They're opposite. The tolerance would be an example there that you get the exact opposite effect. But 90% of what we see is a mimicking effect. Mimicking effects are likely to be much more important in drug addiction because now start to imagine this. If the stimuli associated with the drug, like ringing the bell or the apparatus I test my rats in, causes condition responding, that condition responding is being directed by a brain system, probably mesolimbic dopamine, because that's the one that's involved in the unconditioned response. So that mesolimbic dopamine is showing increases in activity when you see stimuli related to the drug. The environment, the sounds, the people you used to hang out with, the music coming on the MP3 player, you know, associative conditioning. Now you start to activate that dopamine system. Activating that dopamine system is like giving you a little taste of the drug. That little taste of the drug is hitting a sensitized reward mechanism, and you go, wow, and all of a sudden your behavior is totally changed again, the motivational toxicity is there, and you've relapsed. By the way, they've shown back in the 70s, to show back how far this goes back, people rang a bell, gave morphine, rang a bell, gave morphine, rang a bell, gave morphine, rang a bell, didn't give morphine, whacked off the head. Sorry, that's the way we had to do it back then. And what they showed is conditioned increases in dopamine from repeated morphine injections. So we've known about conditioning for a long time. Those investigators weren't even studying this kind of stuff. They didn't put this together in this way.
You can see how important conditioning effects are in psychopharmacology, and you have a hint of how these are going to figure prominently into theories of addiction, especially theories which explain relapse to drug-taking behavior. These podcasts are copyright 2012 by the Addiction Science Network. They are produced in collaboration with the State University of New York at Buffalo and are provided solely for educational purposes. Podcasts can be directly downloaded from www.addictionscience.net. Transcripts are also available for some podcasts at our website, as are other documents and commentaries regarding drug addiction and select topics on psychopharmacology. These podcasts can be copied and freely distributed as long as the source is acknowledged and provided they are not edited in a manner which changes the fundamental meaning of the selected passages when quoted out of context of the entire presentation. Correspondence from professional colleagues is welcomed and can be sent to info@addictionscience.net. We do not offer clinical services, nor do we usually have time to reply to questions emailed from the general public. When listening, please keep in mind that these podcasts are targeted for academic and professional listeners. Everyone is invited to share any information they find useful, but our target audience is not the general public. Finally, please note that the Addiction Science Network is the sole author of this work, and views and opinions expressed herein should not be construed as official policy of the State University of New York.